From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. Well, it is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and I hope that everyone had a safe and happy and healthy holiday. On today's show, Amanda Everidge from the Black Farmers Fund talks about the challenges that Black farmers and business owners face in our region, and the Farmers Fund's effort to provide rapid response funding. Plus, what exactly is a black hole, and how do they form? To some, it's a mysterious cosmic object. And this morning, we're going to unpack what exactly it is. We chat with Keith Hubbard after his usual report for an extended edition of Star Talk. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is stating on social media that the U.S. military conducted another deadly strike on a small boat he said was carrying drugs in the eastern Pacific. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports this is the 22nd known attack on alleged narco traffickers.
Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth released a brief surveillance video of a boat bursting into flames. It took place the same day that Admiral Mitch Bradley briefed congressional leaders behind closed doors about the first strike on September 2nd. Some Democratic members of Congress say video of that incident showed that two surviving crew members were killed while trying to right their capsized boat. Republicans say it was illegal military action.
NPR's Quill Lawrence. A Russian mass missile and drone attack overnight hammered Ukraine's energy infrastructure, hitting substations and power generation facilities. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports that Ukrainians are coping as best they can.
Air raid sirens blared over Kyiv in the early morning hours Saturday, but the strikes were targeted at energy facilities more than civilian infrastructure this time. The Kremlin is trying to cripple Ukraine's energy structures ahead of another winter of war. Generators hum away on the sidewalks of Kyiv, and people plan their lives around the rolling blackouts. 27-year-old Victoria Muskaluk is buying fresh eggs at her weekly street market.
Unfortunately, you are getting used to it, and you need to handle somehow to, you know, to have your mental state on a normal level.
She says Ukrainians are hanging on and trying to live as they can. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kyiv.
It was a busy week in the business world. Two Hollywood giants are emerging while investors look for more clues about how the economy is doing. As NPR's Maria Aspen reports, the Dow continues its climb.
Netflix is spending $72 billion to get even bigger. The streaming giant has agreed to buy Warner Brothers movie studios and HBO streaming service in a mega deal that could reshape the entertainment industry. The deal still needs regulatory approval, but the news sent Warner Brothers stock soaring on Friday, as the wider markets also rose. Wall Street also spent the week parsing inflation and jobs data before the Federal Reserve meets next week. The economic outlook is getting cloudier. Consumer prices ticked up in September, according to a delayed government report, while private employers cut tens of thousands of jobs last month. Investors are widely expecting the Fed to lower interest rates again next week. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
A federal vaccine advisory committee has voted to end a long-standing recommendation that all U.S. babies get the hepatitis B vaccine on the day they're born. Now a CDC panel is recommending the birth dose only for babies whose mothers test positive. This is NPR.
This is Radio Catskill. The New York State Attorney General's office is now looking into whether officials in the village of South Blooming Grove interfered with the recent local election, an election where just 132 people voted out of roughly 4,000 residents. The probe follows complaints from residents who say they didn't even know an election was happening. Here's Philip Pontuso, managing editor for the Times Union.
After the election, a number of residents there complained to their representative, State Senator James Skoufis, who just happens to chair the Senate's Investigations Committee, saying, hey, we didn't even know this election was happening. Can you look into this? And what they found is that Village Board had moved the election up to October 22nd from when it had been scheduled, which was for next March 2026.
Lawmakers say the village not only shifted the date, but also changed its paper of record, stopped posting meeting minutes, and made no mention of the election on its website or social channels. State Senate investigators also interviewed a village official who admitted the election was moved because local yeshivas were closed, meaning fewer people were around to vote.
The Senate Investigations Committee took all of this material, has sent it up to the Attorney General's office. And if the Attorney General's office finds that they committed some kind of criminal activity, which nobody's quite alleging yet, then there may be further consequences.
The Attorney General has not yet said whether a formal investigation or legal action will follow, but the review is underway. In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thanks.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, as I mentioned during the top of the hour, I hope everyone had a safe and healthy holidays last week. My family actually ended up coming up here to the Catskills, and we just had a really nice time. We were building a fire, feeding the chickens, and it was just a really nice reminder to spend time with loved ones, whether that's, you know, family, friends, your chosen family. It really is very therapeutic and healing to the soul. Less than 1% of all farmers in the United States are Black farmers, according to USDA data. Decades of discriminatory loan terms and systemic racism has excluded Black farmers and business owners from thriving in today's agricultural industries. The Black Farmer Fund is working to change that by expanding access to capital, shared learning, and resources. Here with me now is Amanda Everich. They're the community facilitator and education manager at the Black Farmer Fund. Amanda, welcome to Farming Country.
Hey, Kimberly. It's great to be here with you. And yeah, excited to talk.
Of course. Yeah, I'm super excited for this conversation. I've been looking forward to this one for quite some time. You know, Amanda, I'd love to just start by just hearing more about the work of Black Farmer Fund. Can you tell me a little bit more about the organization and the kinds of farmers you work with in New York State, especially in more rural areas of the state?
Sure. So yeah, Black Farmer Fund was started by two farmers, Olivia Watkins and Karen Washington, and we support farmers and food businesses across the Northeast in different states. And we do that through funding, through community building, and resources such as technical assistance and education. And yeah, we support farmers through main funding with our fund, BFF Fund 2.0. We also have a rapid response fund for emergencies, and we have a community garden fund, which funds community gardens, you know, in more urban locations. And so, yeah, we work with farmers that are growing vegetables, growing fruit, that have CSA programs, that do food and medicine distribution, that do beekeeping, seed distribution, some homesteaders. So really all types of farmers and food businesses. And so, yeah, those are the types of people that we're connecting with and building community with and supporting.
And you're the community facilitator and education manager at the fund. Can you tell me a little bit about what that day-to-day looks like for you?
So our decisions around our funding are determined by our committees. And so I work with both of the main committees that we have. So the investment committee and then the rapid response committee. So I work managing the rapid response fund, and that committee decides where that funding goes. That's pretty much what my day-to-day looks like. A lot of decision-making and people collaborating together from different knowledge bases.
Well, you probably just wrapped up an incredibly busy time because
the fund actually just closed its fall rapid response applications just a few months ago in October last month. I'd love to just hear, I know you're probably going through the applications and really in it, but I'd love to just hear about what you're hearing from farmers and small business owners about what they need right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of farmers and food businesses going through issues with vehicle and equipment repairs, also climate issues such as flooding and safety support. You know, they might need fencing, they might need different things in their farm to protect the area that they're actually cultivating and the land they're stewarding. And then also funding freeze issues. So people have lost funding through everything going on right now with the government. So we are also supporting folks that are going through situations like that.
I am curious just in terms of the investment setbacks. I mean, here in our listening area, we've heard from, you know, stories from Black farmers in our coverage area that have named immediate investment setbacks from both Trump's USDA cuts as well as the rollback of so many important DEI programs. Can you talk a little bit about what you're hearing from farmers about how these cuts hurt the region's agricultural ecosystems for the long haul?
I mean, these cuts really take away people's operational funding that they have just to exist and for them to keep getting, you know, the food and the goods that they need for themselves, but also for their communities. So a lot of people that we work with, it's really done through community building. And so some of the farmers mm-hmm. that we support, they're the ones that are growing food directly for their community members. I met with someone this week who they help people build garden beds in their homes. And so they're just people we're working with that have all types of projects that are really directly supporting how people are getting food, how people are building with their other community members, and how people are existing and surviving, and also how they're able to thrive. And so these setbacks are really taking away people's everyday resources for them to be well, for them to have food, to have resources that they need.
And Amanda, I'm curious if you could talk a little bit just about some of the unique challenges that Black farmers, especially in the United States, face. I mean, Black farmers make up just such a small percentage of total farmers in the U.S. I think the last time I checked, it was anywhere between 1-2%. Tell me a little bit more about some of the challenges that they face.
Yeah, Black farmers for a very long time now, I mean, you know, the history of this country have been divested from, have not been given resources that they need that are just pivotal to them existing and thriving. And so the work that we're doing is really to support those farmers to exist, for them to sustain what they're doing, for them to grow their businesses and also the food that they're growing. Yeah, Black farmers are really in need of more support financially. Also, just a lot of farmers we deal with are also dealing with safety issues. So really making mm-hmm. sure that the space that they're in is a space where they feel comfortable and people can come to that space. We're seeing farmers deal with all types of issues, especially now with climate. There's more things that are popping up all the time that they need support with.
As I'm sure you're well aware, there's going to be some big shifts happening in agriculture over the next two decades, with half of farmers anticipating transitioning ownership. A lot of aging farmers are planning what that transition looks like for them. Tell me a little bit about how the work that the Black Farmer Fund does now increases the number of Black farm owners for the long haul.
Yeah, we're really trying to touch on different ways of supporting farmers. So capital, funding them so that they can exist, they can have their businesses, they can continue to grow and thrive. Also, the community building that we're doing, we work with farmers of all different ages. So really trying to encourage people to build across ages, to build across, you know, different areas. We work in 9 different states. So really trying to build community so people can learn from each other, to really also cultivate and inspire that next generation of farmers. We also have an ecosystem. We work with other organizations like Farm School NYC, and they're supporting education for the next generation of farmers. So really just trying to uplift the different ways that farmers can continue to grow. So getting capital so they can exist, education, and partnering with other orgs, you know, that are doing similar work, so that this next generation of Black farmers can continue to exist and to thrive.
And for Black farmers and small business owners here in the Catskills, maybe they're hearing about the work that you do for the first time through this segment. How can they find you and just some of the opportunities you have available in the coming months?
Well, I want to say hi to all y'all. Anyone listening, we would love to be in community with you. You can follow us on our website. We also have a newsletter people can sign up for. We have also a social media presence for anyone that's on Instagram. And we have skill shares once a month. People can come to those virtually to learn something and also connect with other people. And then, following us on all of those social media and newsletter and the website, we'll share more events that we can connect with you about.
Amanda, before we sign off, just curious if there's anything else that you want to lift up just about how important this work is right now.
It's such a pivotal time right now to support people connecting with the land, to support people having access to food. And Black farmers are really at the forefront of dealing with a lot of these issues that are happening. And so supporting Black farmers is just a really important thing that people can do, an important way to support the ecosystems around us. And for people themselves to just engage with their own food. Anyone who's feeling like maybe they don't know how to even connect to this world, just start with where you are. Start with your own food, with what you're eating, learning about that. Where does the food come from? And then going to a farmer's market, going to visit a farm for a community work day, which is one of the things that we have. There's so much to learn from Black farmers and what they're doing and ways to support them. So just encouraging folks to get involved.
I've been chatting with Amanda Everidge. They're the community facilitator and education manager at the Black Farmer Fund. Amanda, thank you so, so much for your time and really appreciate all the work that you do.
Thanks, Kimberly. It was great talking to you.
Up next, you know what time it is. This week's Star Talk report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Dominating the southern sky this and every winter is Orion the Hunter. Orion is one of the most recognizable constellations in the sky. When thinking about the winter sky, Orion is the constellation that springs to mind. Orion can be found in the sky first by looking south and then by locating a large rectangle in the sky bisected by three stars. The rectangle is the body of Orion, and the three stars that bisect Orion's body are Orion's belt. Orion is facing us in the sky, which means the bright red star on the left of the rectangle is Orion's right shoulder, and the bright blue star on the right of the rectangle is Orion's left foot. The bright red star, called Betelgeuse, is a star at the tail end of its life. Betelgeuse is classified as a red supergiant, which describes both its color and its size. Betelgeuse has cooled down in its old age, which is why it is burning red. Compare that with the star Rigel, Orion's left foot, which is bright blue and is much hotter. Not only has Betelgeuse cooled down, but it has also swelled to many times its original size. If we were to replace the sun with Betelgeuse, then Betelgeuse would consume Mercury, Venus, and Earth and extend out to the orbit of Mars. The onset of spring finds Orion and the rest of the winter constellations fading from view as the winter constellations seed the sky to the spring constellations. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for this week's report from the stars. And you are in for a treat this Saturday because we have a double dose of Star Talk this week. We're premiering our new potentially regular segment on Farm and Country. We'll see kind of how this pans out, where we do a deep dive on a variety of cosmic world topics with Keith Hubbard. And this morning, we're going to be talking about black holes. What are they and how do they form? On the phone with me now is Keith Hubbard to help me understand what this mysterious object is. Keith, welcome back to Farming Country.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
I am super excited about this. I feel like we've been talking about doing kind of like more of these deep dives because I love, your StarTalk, segments every single week. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I had a little bit more time with Keith.
Yeah, it's definitely a big passion of mine. And I am always really excited when I find out that people want to know more.
Definitely. Well, let's spend a little bit of time talking about black holes. Tell me a little bit about what these objects are and how exactly do they form?
Black holes are some of the most gravitationally attractive objects in the universe. I mean, they're called black holes because their gravitational pull is so enormous that not even light can escape it. And so that's where they get the term black hole. And there's two types of black holes. There's the supermassive black holes, which are believed to exist at the center of almost every galaxy in the universe. Our Milky Way has a supermassive black hole that's billions of times the mass of the sun at its center. And then there's smaller ones, which are called stellar black holes, which result from stars that have a certain mass going supernova, just a violent explosion at the end of its life. And so those are the ones that we're going to focus on today, are those stellar mass black holes.
Because black holes are, I guess, invisible to the naked eye, how have scientists been able to see them or study them?
Yeah, that's a really great question. How can you see something that doesn't let light escape? Right? Now, that's a great question. And the measurements and the observations we have from black holes are all from the material that is surrounding the black holes and the force of attraction that the black hole is exerting on those materials. So if we're talking about the stellar mass black holes, it's all of the gas and dust and just the remnants from this star that exploded. It's still orbiting this black hole. Now we can measure how fast this material is rotating or spinning or being pulled into the black hole. And from that, we can deduce how massive this object that we can't see must be in order to create the observed effects on the material.
What else is important to know about black holes?
So one of the things that is really interesting, and this is what sparked me to want to talk about black holes, is what can happen when two black holes collide and merge. And there was a really, what I found to be an interesting report, study that was released just this past month about two black holes that had collided. And in this case, they were about 7 billion light years away. They produce something called a gravitational wave. If you think about a wave or a ripple on a pond, if you drop a pebble into the pond, you see this ripple going away. These black holes, when they collide, they produce a gravitational wave, which is a ripple through the fabric of space-time itself. Everything produces these gravitational waves, but you need something very, very massive, a collision of two very, very massive objects to produce a gravitational wave large enough that we can detect, because these changes in the fabric of space-time are very, very minute.
Oh, wow. And these gravitational waves, they sound very powerful. Is there any impact to humans from these gravitational waves?
There is no impact to humans or any objects where they are going to be injured or destroyed or anything like that. But there is, some impact, but the effects are so minute, you're not going to notice it at all. And the gravitational waves, when it passes through an object, it will kind of contract the object in one dimension and simultaneously lengthen it in another. You know, because it happens so fast and these changes are so minute, that's why, it took so long for instruments to be able to be sensitive enough to detect these.
And I think it's cool that some of the science that we've learned about gravitational waves and black holes is somewhat or maybe semi recent developments in cosmic science, would you say?
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned, the gravitational waves were first predicted in 1915, and it took 100 years, you know, for them to be confirmed. You know, and so it's the gravitational waves are a case of theory, you know, being so far ahead, a theory being so far ahead of the capabilities of science. You know, and so, you know, it took 100 years, but we finally confirmed a component of the general theory of relativity. You know, we can rely on it.
And I'm hoping, Keith, that we can continue doing more of these deep dives, because I think it's fascinating that a lot of these discoveries have only been in the last, 10, 15 years. What can listeners expect in future chats?
Oh, I mean, the possibilities are, you know, truly endless. I would love to hear from the listeners what some topics that they would like to learn more about or have more of a deep dive. You know, some ones, you know, that I had in mind were the Big Bang, you know, the origin of the universe. You know, what is that and how do we know that? You know, all the way out, you know, going to, you know, the expansion of the universe, you know, and what are the long-term consequences, you know, of the different theories about, you know, the universe's expansion rate.
That's great. And if folks have any, ideas for Star Talk or even just Farming Country, they can always shoot us an email, feedback@wjffradio.org, and we'll make sure that gets over to Keith. I've been chatting with Keith Hubbard of Star Talk. This is one of our newer segments focused on doing deep dives on cosmic world topics. Keith, thanks so much for chatting this morning.
It's always a pleasure, Kim. Thank you very much.
Well, just a few things from our community calendar as we head into the weekend. This Tuesday, December 9th, Sullivan Fresh will host a kitchen takeover by the Sullivan Fresh staff at the Coshecton Fire Station. It'll be from 3 to 9 p.m., and all proceeds will go to the Sullivan Fresh Food Security Program. Also on Tuesday, Penn State Extension will host a virtual webinar on everyone's favorite topic, taxes. Specifically, how your farm business must file federal taxes and what farmers need to know about basic filing requirements. That'll be at 12 p.m. this Tuesday. On Fridays until January 16th, Friends of the Mammocating Environmental Center will host a Nature Tots program from 10 to 11 a.m. for children ages 2 to 4 years old. Kids can learn about nature in a fun, activity-centered environment in Wurtsboro. For more information on any of these events and more events happening in your area, you can head on over to Radio Catskills website at wjffradio.org. Finally, just one note I want to make as we head into a new year, which feels kind of wild to say, but here on Farming Country, we're starting to map out what 2026 is going to look like, what it's going to sound like for you. It's always helpful for Ronald and I to hear from our listeners what kind of stories they enjoy most and what stories might be missing during our half hour together each Saturday. So if you have ideas, we want to hear from you. You can shoot us an email at feedback@wjffradio.org. And that's all for this Saturday's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's Catskill Character. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, NPR. Catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
Healthcare premiums could rise 25% for people using the Affordable Care Act if Obamacare subsidies expire. The debate on how to protect Americans from those costs is ongoing, but it's also worth